The Fan on Demand. Got Game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet590.ca.
This is Got Game, a show by gamers for gamers on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. This week we talk about EA and the franchises that they're locking up, both in the sports game section and the not sports game section of your favorite video game retailer. Ontario's own Silicon Knights have been in the news a lot recently because they have been in some legal troubles, but there's a twist in the story that no one saw coming. We'll discuss it on this week's show. Plus, what's a gamer to do on a week when there's no retail releases? Well, we have a few ideas that you may be interested in.
Have you got game? The Loda.
This is Got Game. I'm your host this week, Brian Calhoun. Momin Qureshi is he down the
He's
hall?
He's on vacation again.
Oh, is he?
I lose track. Goes away so much.
I want his job where I get all this paid vacation.
Seriously,
I don't know if it's paid vacation, but seriously.
Doesn't matter.
But then again, every time he goes on vacation, I get to come in.
Yay!
Yeah, because I'm here.
That's Tim Ashdown.
Oh,
Christine Chubb. Tim Ashdown has breaking news.
I do. Well, I'm actually trying to confirm it right now, but all sources are indicating that the next Xbox has been named. That is leaked or something. I'm sampling this rumor just to protect our butts. But Xbox Infinity.
Yeah, that's kind of what was the rumor that was going around for the last couple of months. So
I think Disney's going to be upset.
Yes.
Yeah, actually.
Because they have their own product, Infinity. And that might be the last thing that this might not happen. So I haven't been able to confirm
this
yet.
Interesting. Who would win in that power struggle?
Disney versus Microsoft?
Yeah, who wants to own all the fun? I don't know.
The infinite amount of fun.
The infinite amount of fun.
Or it's the greatest PR move ever, because then you play Disney Infinity on the Xbox Infinity. So it's Infinity
on
Infinity.
Yeah, maybe they're in on it.
Infinity times two.
Well, I definitely like it better than the 720, but
you know, that was never going to be the name.
I know, but it became one of those things in the vernacular where you're just used to saying it.
Well, the problem I have with Infinity is now, where do you go from here? Is the next Xbox going to be Infinity plus one?
Plus two. Squared.
Like, yeah.
Infinity
like
squared.
Infinity squared. Infinity to the power of infinity.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of numbers on one box.
It's probably just going to be called the Xbox 3. I always thought, though, that you should just like invest in some sort of scheme where you know there's a lot of names. Like, I would have called it the Xbox Red, because the last couple ones were green. And all you got to do is take your green palette, make it red. And then when you're ready to move on, make the next one blue, change your palette to blue. You got to change all the boxes, but I mean, you're going to do that anyhow. So I don't know. I thought that'd be the best way. That would at least gotten you through what? A couple dozen generations, but
I would like Xbox Lavender, please.
Yes.
I would play that. Heck yeah. Yeah, I'm getting this from IGN now, is that next Xbox is reportedly called Infinity, according to the International Business Times.
Okay. Nice.
So that's from IGN. So
unfortunately,
this is
though,
probably the way it's going to go.
We are taping this a couple of days early, so that's not going to be breaking news when this happens. But you know now when we tape Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Now, a story that will definitely appeal to the majority of the people who listen to this show, because let's face it, this is one of the top five selling franchises of all time,
mm-hmm.
like ever, across the world. You want to put it up with Call of Duty.
They're coming close. I mean, I think the latest edition, 15 million copies have been sold worldwide. So
of course, we are talking about FIFA.
FIFA.
FIFA from EA Sports. EA Sports and the Fédération Internationale de Soccer Association.
The football.
Has announced that they have now come to a deal that EA Sports will be making all FIFA games until 2022. Now, that's numbered FIFA, so 14, 15, 16, 17. That's the manager games. That's the special edition World Cup, whatever tournament they come up with,
mm-hmm.
which there's a couple of those that come out every couple of years or so.
I think the only one they don't get is Euro. Euro's not FIFA, is it? I think that's a different.
I'm not totally sure.
I'm not 100% sure on that.
That may be Pro Evolution Soccer, which just announced that they got the Asian League a couple weeks ago.
Oh, cool.
So I don't think we actually got to that story. It was on our show notes, but it's Got Game. We have, you know, a limited time, so not everything gets talked about on here. We try and bring you the really important things, and this is going to be big news for a number of our listeners. The only thing I find confusing about this entire story is that they only got it for a 9-year extension. I figure with the money that FIFA brings them in, you might want to just Lock that up forever.
Yeah.
It may also have been that FIFA, like the organization, just didn't want to give one publisher an exclusive deal for more than 9 years because, yeah. You know, if you could give them a 99-year exclusive deal, and then, you know, who knows where that's going to go.
It's possible, so, but I mean, FIFA...
I think it might have been a FIFA decision, not so much an EA, because EA would totally... EA is done taking risks, I'm pretty sure, and we'll talk about that more in a minute. And I think that they just want to lock up what makes the money, which is FIFA and... other IPs that we're going to get to in a second.
Well, if you're talking about EA Sports, it's FIFA and Madden at the top two for them. Maybe even Tiger Woods, and rumors are that Tiger Woods is not going to be on the next edition. In fact, it's not going to be an ex Tiger Woods, but that has not been confirmed, so we're not really talking about it.
But Tiger Woods 14, good game.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it quite a lot.
I loved it.
Yeah.
And my review of that game was basically, I took it to people who don't play video games and said, you play golf, but you don't play video games, go ahead. And I played the number of rounds with them, and I have not beaten them. So it's a pretty impressive game.
Yeah.
Another piece of EA Sports news just before we move on. The cover vote for NHL is continuing, and there are still two Maple Leafs in the cover vote running.
Yay.
Joffrey Lupo is currently going up against PK Subban from the Canadiens. Now you have until May 19th to vote for him and try and get him into the next round. Also, James Van Riemsdyk is currently up against Tyler Seguin of Boston. That one will be going a little longer. May 26 is how long you have to vote him into the next round. So if you want to get those guys on the cover, go ahead, go to Facebook, whatever it is. Just Google NHL
just look
cover
to
vote.
Google. And I still say that Loophole would make a very handsome, handsome cover. Like, ridiculously handsome.
I should also mention that we have a new intern. Got Game intern Steven is in the corner giving his... thumbs up.
Yeah,
for
diehardly fan,
for
yeah.
Lupo. He mentioned he that he's going down to the Game 5 tailgate party after this. I think he's insane because I don't like big crowds. But
that would not be the place that you would want to be ever then.
No, because I don't like big crowds. But he likes crowds, so he's going because he is a diehard Leaf fan. Now, may the force of profit be with EA.
And what a force it is.
Oh, it is a force that will drown you in Scrooge McDuck money vault-sized vaults coins if you really wanted to.
Especially if you're Disney and EA.
Yeah, seriously.
So we heard this past week that Disney, after buying out LucasArts and pretty much destroying LucasArts so they could keep it and just take those properties.
They didn't destroy it. They consolidated the business group. Read your press releases. They chopped it up and sold away the pieces, just saying.
Well, they haven't sold away the pieces, but what they're doing is basically renting them out to a number of people in order to... basically let those guys make something Star Wars related and they sit there and reap the profits.
Mm-hmm.
As far as video games go, EA, once again, has pretty much locked up exclusive rights, and by pretty much I mean definitely have locked up exclusive rights to make Star Wars games on mobile, console, PC, you name it. If it has Star Wars, it's coming from EA in the future.
Publishing rights. Development rights, not so much. The publishing rights meaning that all Star Wars games will be published by EA. Whether or not they're developed by internal EA studios is not necessarily the case. They could get other development studios to do this, but chances are that, like, it seems weird that they would go to a studio like Square Enix Montreal and get them to do a Star Wars game. However, what they can do is go to an independent studio like United Front, which is a partner of Square Enix, and get them to develop an open-world Sleeping Dogs-like Star Wars game, publish it under the EA label, and that would still be fine. So it doesn't necessarily mean, but EA is obviously going to use their own studios like Visceral Games.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's why I brought it up.
Like
you are correct, but the reason I mentioned, I did not make that clarification, is because in their announcement, they also said that DICE, Visceral Games, and BioWare, which EA Studios, are all currently, while not working on games, are working on the brainstorming process which would lead to the development of video games under Star Wars licenses.
Yeah. Oh, I'm confident they will use their own studios to do this. Especially
for sure.
BioWare, which has a long-standing history with the Star Wars license. They did Knights of the Old Republic 1 and 2. The Old Republic is still being played, but not obviously by not enough people, because it's great. You should go play it. Nobody plays that game, and I loved it. But I'm really excited about DICE getting their hands on the Star Wars license.
Because you want a Battlefront 2 game, or sorry, is it 3 now?
Yeah, it would be Battlefront 3, which has been kind of bandied around in development hell for years. Will it's happening, concept leaks, concept art leaks have come out and everything like that. But, I mean, the guys who do Battlefield doing Battlefront, I'm super excited about that, especially with Frostbite 3 technology, which looks amazing.
Let's face it, at this point, all it has to be is an asset change, and away you go.
Pretty
already
much.
Have a
a massive multiplayer first-person shooter game out there where you can jump in different vehicles and do that. So,
and at this point, as a Star Wars fan, I just want more Star Wars games. Mm-hmm. Like, the last thing we got was, that wasn't a Lego game, was probably, what, Force Unleashed 2 or The Old Republic?
Well, the last one would actually have been The Old Republic.
Yeah. Which I enjoyed. I just don't have time to dedicate to an MMO. But a pick-up-and-play first-person shooter, I'm so on board with that.
Well,
You're obviously forgetting Star Wars Kinect as well.
I got a lot of flack from my review on that one because I gave it like a 70.
Oh, really?
A lot of people were like, 70? How much did LucasArts pay you? And I'm like, I just really like Star Wars. Dancing's fun.
It was fun.
Those dancing minigames were not bad. I
did like them. If you're into dancing, I'm a princess in a battle.
Yes. Yes, those are also the greatest.
The parody songs were fantastic.
That was the best part. They, instead of actually paying licensed music, well, maybe it wasn't instead because they want to.
I know Hoodies was another one.
Shaking his head.
Just an amazing package Star Wars Kinect was.
It was.
Clearly will live on in the memories of people forever. And I was going to ask you guys what games you were probably looking forward to, or at least expecting, and I'm guessing Tim is down for Battlefront. Christine, are you hoping this means Star Wars 1313 happens?
I think it definitely won't mean that it happens, but I guess this answers the question about why it vanished, why it suddenly was completely off the table. Mm-hmm. I think if they make something that's kind of like that, I don't know out of the list of possibilities if they can take the assets that have already been created and remake it. That would be amazing because it did look really good. And I mean, obviously, we saw this last year, and it was very exciting. And it already had a year of production.
It's strange that they didn't even really have much of a game. But you talk to anyone who saw that demo, and they are just insanely
amped for it.
Yeah, it's a perfect word for that, Tim. Thank you.
It was, like I've said before, it was the Star Wars game the Star Wars fans deserve to have. That's what we looked at and we saw. It wasn't, you know, kiddish. It wasn't silly. It wasn't like, I mean, don't get me wrong, kiddish and silly are fine. But this was like a serious, you know, exciting, action-packed kind of Star Wars game that everybody really wants to play. When you were a kid, you didn't play the silly parts of it. You played the exciting parts. You had the lightsaber. You were taking down enemies. You were running through ships as they exploded. You were doing all these exciting things in your imagination. It looked like this was what this game was going to be. And it just, to have it taken right off the table was so heartbreaking.
And you bring up a point that I wonder if we should sort of just be a little, I don't want to say jaded, but cautious in our excitement, considering if you look at what Star Wars has become, there are two Star Wars. There's what we grew up with.
The good one and the bad one.
There's good and bad Star Wars.
But the bad one is the one they are pushing right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's because kids like it. And that's fine.
Parents have a lot of money to spend on kids.
They are kids' movies. As far as Star Wars goes, I'm not only a movie guy, I'm also an expanded universe guy. I've read lots of books. Mm-hmm. I've read Kevin J. Anderson, Timothy Zahn, all these authors that have expanded the universe. And this is actually what scares me about the exclusive deal with EA, because the Star Wars universe is built on many different creative people adding their own layers to it, like writers like Kevin J. Anderson, who recently did a book with Rush, a Canadian band, and he's a very creative star science fiction writer, and he's done a lot of great Star Wars stories. So I'm afraid that by having it be this exclusive thing that EA's doing, we might lose a little bit of that creativity that I've come to know and love from Star Wars.
And you also have to think, in the next 4 years, Star Wars is going to take a huge turn with all the new movies that are coming out. Who knows how that's going to be? Who knows how that's going to change the storyline?
Yeah.
Who knows how that's going to evolve, or hopefully not devolve, the Star Wars legacy? I mean, I would imagine from all the flack and the kind of pressure that the system is under, they will have to make this a better movie franchise. Mm-hmm. Because let's face it, I mean, Lucas killed the last three, so you have to revive it. You have to bring it back from whence it was. And I think right now this is the perfect time for it.
Well, I think we can all agree that if there is not a new X-Wing versus TIE fighter game,
my God, that would be so cool,
coming out of this, then Disney has done messed up. But unfortunately, we are out of time. So there's more Got Game to come, but it's not going to be until after the sports update. We will see you then. This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. We've got game. Do you? In the game.
This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I am Brian Calhoun. Momin Qureshi is not here. I think he's down the hallway. I've lost track of him.
Keep telling you, he's a secret assassin.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. Last time I was here, he was gone. He was off in Turkey, you know, undergoing his training, and now he's out on mission.
Well,
Secret Assassin, Momo Qureshi.
You see, the problem is, though, and the reason why I keep losing track of him is because instead of losing track, I should have just said not cared where he is. He's not here, though.
Oh.
Ouch.
He will be back next week, perfect though, cover, for a very special edition Gaki. You should tune in for that for sure. But more on that later. Because right now, we have to talk about the Silicon Knights.
Ooh.
Or, well, are they Silicon Knights? Because that company went under, I think.
No, actually, it didn't. Before we start, well, at least it doesn't appear to be, and I would not be surprised if it hasn't, but we should probably just start off by saying that last night Polygon ran a story saying that Silicon Knights still exists as an entity. There's only a couple people there. They're pretty much kind of just a legal entity right now. Don't expect any games to ever come out of them at all, because they pretty much sold all their stuff to Precursor Games, which is not run by, but is definitely...
there's a connection there.
There's definitely a connection there, because a lot of people were wondering what happened to Dennis Dyack and pretty much the rest of Silicon Knights. It turns out that they moved down the 401 to Hamilton, Ontario, and they opened up a new office, and now they're calling themselves Precursor Games, which... I have to admit, not a turn I was expecting in this story with the Silicon Knights. I did not see that one coming at all.
No, and I don't know. This one just had, when I first saw this story, I was like, "What? Wait!" And because at first I was like, "Eternal Darkness." Oh my God, that sounds so cool! Like, yeah. A lot of people have a lot of love for Eternal Darkness.
And the story is basically that the first game that they are, like, this new Precursor Games studio is going to try and make is not a actual sequel to Eternal Darkness, because they don't have the IP rights.
That belongs to Silicon Knights.
Yes, which,
or actually, I think Nintendo owns the rights to that because they published it, I think.
Honestly, I'm not totally
sure.
I'd
have to double check that. But
All I remember about the games that came out on the GameCube, and that's it. And it was one of the only good games for the GameCube. Not because the system wasn't good. There really wasn't a lot of developer support for the GameCube. So you had a few good games, and that was among them. Other than that, though, kind of a lackluster lineup for the GameCube. However, because they can't make an actual sequel to Eternal Darkness, they're making a spiritual sequel, if you will, or at least follow-up, called The Shadows of the Internals. Mm-hmm. And in an interesting turn of events, it's being crowdfunded, or at least attempted to be crowdfunded. No, Silicon... Well, I should apologize. Precursor Games. Mm-hmm. And that's probably going to happen more than one time.
Legally a separate company.
Legally a separate company. Precursor Games are asking for $1.5 million in order to put out basically a pilot episode of a... episodic Sega, if you will, that will basically make up this Shadows of the Eternal game. Right now, they pretty much have a little over 2,200 backers who have ponied up a little over $100,000. So slightly off the mark there.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, they're not exactly on. I mean, they're clearly not making having a kind of a double fine pace to it.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah, so, I mean, and actually, if you follow Kickstarter game trends, this does not bode well for this crowdfunding campaign. I'm not going to say anything about whether the game's going to come out, but it does not bode well. So
now, interesting little twist here. This is not actually a Kickstarter or Indiegogo or any sort of thing, which may also be hurting it, because let's face it, there's a lot of people that go on Kickstarter and go, let's see, what am I going to spend my money on today and just go randomly search that sort of stuff.
I'm not sure which... they list on the site which company it is being powered by, but I think... not going to Kickstarter, not going to Indiegogo is probably a way to keep more of the... Because Kickstarter and Indiegogo, they take a cut of the crowdfunding money, but they are crowdfunding this. And it works the same way, is that you donate a certain amount of money, you'll get certain perks. If you donate $10,000, you can get an executive producer credit on the game.
Really?
Yes. And you get to go to sunny Hamilton, Ontario.
Ooh, very pretty.
And go to the Precursor Games studio. And you also get to go to the private launch party when the game is ready and everything. And among other benefits, but that's pretty much the top tier.
Yeah. The lowest tier actually on the other end is like $5, and that basically gets you the very first episode. Mm-hmm. So they're charging $5 for the first episode. $25 will get you all the episodes in the first season, so it's going to be $5 an episode.
How do we feel about this?
This is weird.
Yeah, this is, it's really strange. It's really weird to see Dennis Dyack back again so soon.
Yeah.
And I mean, the fact that the entire company is made up of Silicon Knights expats kind of leaves me concerned, because there was, you know, there was some I'm not going to say anything specific, but there was some shenanigans going on at that company, especially in the later days. And the fact that it's the same guys and they didn't bring in anyone new, even one new face,
that is a little unusual,
would make me a little bit more comfortable. Like one guy, like say one guy from, you know, EA, or now if that one guy was maybe from 38 Studios, I'd be a little bit more concerned. But even then, I would be less concerned than I am now, because 38 Studios, you know, they at least tried.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they did have a game come out where that was Kingdoms of Amalur was far better than X-Men Destiny. Just saying.
That is true. It is easy, though, to go and look at the game and go, well, Dennis Dyack and Silicon Knights, what are those guys doing? And are they, like, just bad at business or bad at making games? But we don't know what happened.
Be awesome. It totally could. I just don't know if crowdfunding's the way for them to go. And they say that they're doing the crowdfunding thing because they want that close relationship with their community and their fans and everything
yeah,
like
fact,
that,
let's,
which is
let's,
fine.
Let's listen to Dennis Dyack right now and explain why they're doing this.
Being in the industry for a very, very long time, one of the biggest problems that we always had as game designers is we never had that direct contact with the consumer. So with digital distribution, we can look to ways to raise our own money and interact directly with the consumers and have that direct feedback that allows us to do things in many, many different ways and ways that haven't been done before.
That was Dennis Dyack actually speaking about why they are working on this game. I have to ask you guys, though, do you trust Dennis Dyack? I mean, let's take something off the table and say that nobody knows, unless you're inside the Silicon Knights,
what happened to Silicon
or if you're a lawyer with Epic Games, mm-hmm. exactly what happened. The theory has always been, though, that they have been pushing a sequel to Eternal Darkness for half a decade now, mm-hmm. and that a lot of money they took off of the development of, you know, games like X-Men Destiny.
Yeah.
Although this
allegedly.
I should say this is not confirmed.
Speculative, yeah.
Yeah, we are only speculating here. Allegedly, a lot of that money was taken out of the development of X-Men Destiny and mm-hmm. put into making assets for a sequel to Eternal Darkness, which, well, we don't know what's happening. Could be backed up by the fact that they're only asking for $1.5 million.
Only $1.5 million.
To make this game. Now, if they only had to polish up what they had in order to get, say, a pilot episode out, mm-hmm. then you could maybe see that working. Because you look at the scope of the game, you know, a 3D world with 3D graphics that look not cutting edge, but pretty decent for, you know, what you expected. $1.5 million is not going to buy that stuff. Well, something does not add up here financially.
I agree with you there. And from, I mean, in this in this crowdfunding video that, you know, Precursor Games has put out, they have shown gameplay or some form of gameplay in mm-hmm. these videos. And from the state, that looks like it's in, looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm curious to know is if your game's that far along, what's the $1.5 million for? It seems, and this is what my concern would be with, is that Kickstarter is meant to fund a project. And not Kickstarter, but crowdfunding is meant to fund a specific project that people believe in and they want to happen, not to bankroll your development studio. That is not the point. All this money should be going to the development of this game, mm-hmm. not keeping Precursor Games from locking its doors. They shouldn't be paying their rent with this crowdfunding money. And I'm not saying they are, but the fact that it's $1.5 million, what are they going to spend that money on?
And you said it earlier off the mic when we were talking about this project. It was like, you know, they already have a community developer. It's like if it's in the beginning of projects, what do you need a community developer for? Mm-hmm. Like unless it's to like publicize the fact that you're not using a well-known crowd-funded server like
Kickstarter. Indiegogo,
But still, at the same time, how many people do you think that the community developers really reached out to in this kind of way?
Mm-hmm. Well, according to this little ticker on their thing, just over 2,200 people is probably what they've reached. Maybe a few more, but that's the number of people who have backed it so far.
Yeah. And I don't think that those people are wrong in backing this project, especially if they have a lot of love for Eternal Darkness, which a lot of people do. And there's nothing wrong with bankrolling a project you believe in. I'm just knowing the pedigree of the people who are running this thing, it just leaves me asking a few questions. That's all. I'm not saying save your money, obviously, with any crowdfunding. It's buyer beware. And if you believe in this product, definitely fund it. That's what these things are all about. Personally, I'm a little bit skeptical because mm-hmm. of what I've seen happen with these people.
We say people, but mm-hmm. when you look at Silicon Knights as a whole, as an entity making business decisions as a company, that's where it all gets a little dicey, which is why they pretty much stepped away from Silicon Knights. They are now Precursor Games. It's not an uncommon tactic for when a company to have a bad streak of luck to basically change the name on the top of the door and move on. Yeah. But the problem that they have is that Dennis Dyack is not the top guy in this company. I think he's second. He's a creative.
He's creative, creative opera, or CCO.
Yeah, he's CCO, creative content something or other. Yeah. But Dennis Dyack has been the face, whether he wanted to or not, of the entire Silicon Knights meltdown.
Yeah.
And we're pretty much the Silicon Knights in general, but of the meltdown, it was not really Silicon Knights, it was Dennis Dyack.
Mm-hmm.
And whether or not that was truthful or not truthful, putting him in here, you know, having him in the pitch video multiple times, that raises red flags for me.
Yeah, and it does for me as well. What I'm getting at is that you're only as good as your last game, and the last game Dennis Dyack made was X-Men Destiny, which was awful.
Yeah.
So that's you know, if we were coming off Too Human into this, I'd be a little bit more easy, because Too Human wasn't terrible, it was competent.
Yeah.
But X-Men Destiny was just, it was rushed and bad and just terrible. So
we've made
the bad taste.
We've made we speculated that a lot of the money that may have gotten in development of X-Men Destiny went into this Eternal Darkness spiritual successor.
Yeah.
And yeah, that X-Men game may have been much better if it had like more money. So, well, it's all speculation. That could sort of maybe back up why that X-Men game was not that great.
Well, that's not good either. You know what I mean? Like, you shouldn't, that's not how you should make a game. Is you should,
no.
With the game, the current project you're working on should get all your efforts. You know what I mean? Because that's how you get good games.
Yeah.
Is, you know, I mean, not everyone can be a studio like Ubisoft Montreal, where you can create Assassin's Creed 3 and Far Cry 3 and release them months apart. That is a studio of like 800 people. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people working in Ubisoft Montreal. It's their biggest studio. Silicon Knights, I think at its peak, had 150 employees, maybe around 200. And that
somewhere
was at its
that.
Peak during Too Human development.
And that was with help from the government of Ontario, who had given them... Well, was going to give them money. They never actually got any of the money.
Yeah, that was also a really weird situation what happened there. Because there was promises made, and then money was delivered, and some wasn't, and it had to be returned. And it was just really confusing.
Milestones were not met, as far as I understand. But we are almost out of time. So before we leave you, let's leave you with an idea of what this game actually is. Now, here is multiple members of the Precursor Game Studio talking about what this Shadows of the Eternals is going to be, and it's not Dennis Dyack from start to finish, but it does start with Dennis Dyack.
And it sounds neat.
We follow the investigation of Paul Becker. He's been called to a crime scene where there's been a massacre in this abandoned asylum. Two survivors remain. One person who's completely clean cut and looks like he's right off of Wall Street. Another who looks like he's dressed in full colors from a biker gang.
You are interrogating two people that are giving you different versions of the same story.
They've lost their memory of who they are, they can't remember anything, and they want to kill each other.
Your job is to figure out what parts of each of these people's story is the truth.
It takes place over thousands of years at several different locations.
That was the development staff of Precursor Games explaining what their game will be if they successfully crowdfund it. And credit should go to the Precursor website. That's where we found all the audio that we've played so far. Segment 2 is done. We are out of time. But hold on. After the sports update, we'll be back. This is Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We've got game. Do you? Gameplay.
Welcome to the final segment here of Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Brian Calhoun, Christine Chubb, Tim Ashdown from CG Magazine. You can find his stuff, cgmagazine.ca.
CG, yes.
I'm known for getting that incorrect, but
that's okay. Our latest issue actually features a cover with Guacamelee on it.
Yes.
Which is done by Toronto's own Drinkbox Studios. So that's a newsstand on newsstands now. Go check that out. You even actually wrote a review for us.
That's true.
Yeah, you wrote a review of Defiance for us on CG Magazine.
Because nobody else wanted to.
None of us wanted to touch that game, so we're like, give it to Brian.
Well, that's not in the magazine. You'll have to go to the website for that.
Yeah, you can go to cgmagazine.ca and read Brian's full review.
Now, interesting news coming up Bethesda this week, Christine. Mm-hmm. And as our official Bethesda reporter, I left it up to you to research this.
Yeah, big. This is the second big announcement that Bethesda has made in the last month. So I guess they're really excited to push some stuff at E3. So I'm already excited to be there, and now this is more exciting. What they've announced this week is that Wolfenstein is coming back. They're bringing back. It's called Wolfenstein: The New Order, and it's a reimagining, which is my favorite terminology.
I like how you said it like SpongeBob, like reimagining.
What this game will take place? It takes place in the 1960s, and in this version, the Nazis have won World War II, and it would seem, from the little bit of trailer that they teased, they are not too pleased with England. They kind of destroy Big Ben and all the government parliament. But what they did, much like last month when they started doing little Vine videos to introduce the evil within, is they did a few images where it was just kind of like, look what's coming, and they would tag it 1960. And then eventually it was released that it would be a new Wolfenstein game. The interesting thing about this, though, is that no multiplayer is planned for this game, which was a big thing in some of the other Wolfenstein games. But it looks exciting. More is going to come out in the next few weeks, so I'm really jacked. Yay, Bethesda.
Yes, you are.
Christine likes her alt history.
I do. I really do.
Hey, remember Singularity?
Yeah.
Similar sort of idea there, and that was a great game.
Yeah, same. And I think that, I can't remember who did that.
Raven did.
Was it Raven?
Raven's last game before they became a Call of Duty map house was Singularity, which is such a shame. I wanted a sequel to that.
They actually did the last Wolfenstein game we got was Raven as well.
Yes.
So they took what they learned from Wolfenstein, did Singularity, which is a slightly different story, and then somehow Bethesda got their hands on it again. So that's cool. But Bethesda, I mean, everything they do is first person, so they have that perspective down. So,
yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Let's face it, this industry is weird, and just sort of the way things work inside of it are weird. For example, we find ourselves this week without any actual retail releases to speak of.
Because the weather is getting nice.
Well, that's one reason, but let's face it, in a couple of weeks we're going to get our hands on the Fast and Furious video game, so stop everything.
And our highest rated show ever will be that show.
Most anticipated.
And to be a little more serious, there's also Metro's coming out next week. So that's a game that when it was actually a THQ game, I saw it, I think it was last E3, and it did actually look pretty good. They had some really good visuals. A lot of interesting set pieces, especially that one where you're watching a plane go down from the cockpit of the plane while nuclear strikes happen on Moscow was kind of surreal. So that will be out next week. So we'll talk about that.
I think now it's being published by Deep Silver, actually, the same people who published Dead Island.
Yes, so, and the other Dead Island that came out recently that wasn't as well received. But the first Dead Island was really nice, and it was just a publishing deal. So they did not actually, Deep Silver did not make the game. They just published it. But this week you have a couple of choices. Dust 514 is out.
Hmm.
So you can go play that.
It's free,
It's free to play, yeah. CCP, makers of Eve, have made this first-person shooter in the Eve world, where basically if you play Eve, you can do all these commands that will filter down into Dust 514, which apparently has gotten a whole graphical update recently.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I first saw it at E3 during... Oh, I forget who had it at their big presser, but someone had it.
And it might have been Sony, because... actually, I don't know.
You know what? It probably was Sony, because this is a Sony exclusive. You can't play on the Xbox. You can only play it on the PlayStation 3, perhaps the PlayStation 4 when that comes out, but right now PlayStation 3 only. It literally looked like they took the tanks out of Halo and put it in this game. So there was a lot of questions there, but they've done an entire graphical upgrade recently, and they're putting the game out on Tuesday, and it's free. So if you want a new first-person shooter, you can go play that.
Yeah, it's actually the best way to find it, because I downloaded it last night. The best way to find it is go to the PSN store and then filter by, and then look for free-to-play, because there's only like maybe 10 free-to-play titles on PSN, one of them being DC Universe Online, another one's Uncharted and things like that. But you can find Dust 514 pretty easily if you filter by free-to-play.
Now, if you don't have a PlayStation 3, you only have a computer, man, do I have something for you. This one is called Auto Club Revolution, also free-to-play. I'm mentioning it right now, though, because you know, free-to-play has that negative connotation with it when you go, oh, a free game.
What's the catch?
Yeah, what's the catch? Well, the catch here is that it looks like they've taken basically Forza 3, maybe Forza 4, that sort of gameplay, mixed it with an iPhone game, Real Racing, I believe is what it's called.
Real Racing 3, yeah.
And put those together, put it on the PC. And it's free-to-play, microtransactions obviously included, but when you talk about like games like Forza and Real Racing, those are high-quality racing games. So that's the level that you're looking at right now. But we were curious about what it was. We had comparisons in our mind, but we really weren't totally sure what All Club Revolution was. So we basically asked Dan Robinson of U-Technics to explain it for us. And because we're kind of jerks, the first question we asked is, what would you compare the game to?
The closest comparisons to what's out there at the moment are probably Real Racing and Forza Motorsport. They're the two closest games, I guess. But, you know, we are still, we think, very different to both of those titles. The fact that we, you know, bring in fully licensed content through a mixture of both fictional and licensed racing circuits, and also just from a car parts manufacturer perspective as well, the amount of ways that you can actually upgrade your chosen vehicles is quite extensive. And the whole idea behind it was really trying to take the kind of social elements of a Facebook game, but mix them in with a kind of real thoroughbred console racer. And that's how Auto Club Revolution came about, really, was trying to mix those two elements together that hadn't been done before, but then also making it free to play for people and, you know, not really skimping or saving on the quality of the racing experience that we wanted to put out there. But just saying, here you go, this is it's a free-to-play console racing game available in the browser.
I was going to ask this question at the end because I figured it would be the best place to put it so that second people are done, if they're interested, they can go check it out. But there's also apparently a racing app. I threw out the idea of comparing this game to a number of games, but what I'm actually thinking about when I hear about this companion app is kind of what Battlefield 3 is, where you do all your stuff in this web browser window, and then when you want to go in there and actually play the game, just like Battlefield 3, you would just hit launch game and it brings up an app. Where does all that stuff come from? Where can you grab that? I guess Steam would be an obvious choice.
Steam is something that we're actually working on now, so watch this space in terms of us you know, bringing it out on apps like Steam. But at the moment, you just go to autoclubrevolution.com. You do a registration, which is, you know, very quick and easy. And then you just download the app from our own website. And like you say, it is just a case of, you know, you do probably 95% of the game takes place in the browser. And then when it comes to race, you hit the Race Now button and the app loads up. On screen, you do the race, and then after the race, you're back into the browser again. So it was just a way for us really to maintain the quality of the race experience that we wanted to get. And if we were wanting to do that in a browser, we'd probably have had to cut some things out or reduce the quality, and we really didn't want to do that.
I should mention right now that Dan Robinson is with U-Technics, a European-based developer of racing games. You probably recognize the name because these guys have also put out the NASCAR The Game games, the last couple ones from Activision in the last couple of years. So they've been working on that. And also today we are talking about Auto Club Revolution, the other racing game they've been working on, a free-to-play game that you can grab for the PC, the PC only. And also, according to the fact sheet, it's also Windows PC, so you need a Windows platform in order to get it working. Now, one thing that I do know about this game, Dan, is that there's going to be 50 cars, a number of tracks like Daytona, Sonoma Raceway will also be in there. Could you sort of break down what that content will be, what the cars will be, what the tracks will be? And how did you guys come to that decision? Because with all the options out there, yes, Bugatti's obviously an interesting choice. McLaren, why not? Jaguar, though, at least to me, is not kind of in that same list. So everyone would have their own reasons for putting different cars in the game. What was yours?
So, I mean, the car list came about really because we wanted to make sure that we had a good breadth of choice for people. You know, it's all well and good having the supercars, like you mentioned, the Bugatti Veyrons and the Koenigsegg Agueras. But ultimately, those cars work really well on, like you say, Daytona, Silverstone, Spa, Sonoma, tracks with, you know, big long straights and sweeping corners. And that's fantastic. But what we also wanted to do was showcase, A, some different locations, so tracks that had, you know, narrower circuits or tighter corners, and actually using some of the kind of, certainly in Europe we call them hot hatchbacks, the kind of smaller cars that have got, you know, decent power engines underneath the hood. But really, they're designed for these tighter circuits. And that gives a completely different style of racing. You have to look for different things and handle the cars entirely differently. So it was all about achieving a breadth of content that we wanted to put out there for all the different types of racers that there are out there. You know, whilst it's fun to take a Bugatti Veyron around a great big long straight and see how fast you can get. It's equally as fun to see how you can handle a smaller car around a tight circuit and see whether you can get around the corners, you know, quicker than your mates. And that was kind of the theory behind it, was just to pick, you know, different levels of cars that represented every style of racer in the game. And so we do take them from the kind of, I hate to use the word, but the everyday normal family car, like a Volkswagen Beetle, all the way up through the ranges, up to the Bugatti Veyron, you know, encompassing all the different types of cars that there are out there.
And you talk about hot hatches, and if there's anything I've learned from watching Jeremy Clarkson on Top Gear, it's that, at least to a North American audience, when you think about the UK, soccer is obviously the sport in mind, but man, do you guys love your auto racing.
Yeah. And we've talked plenty about content, what kind of cars are going to be in the game, but I'm curious to know how it's going to play. Now, I've played a few racing games in my day, and I'm not that good. So I tend to leave a lot of the assists on, like the brake assist, the turning assist, or give me a line visually. I was wondering what kind of features does Auto Club Revolution have for people who may not be the best at a simulation-based racing game?
Yeah, so we... The attitude that we took, both from a development and a publishing perspective, was very much we had no compromises. You know, we were going to approach this game in the same way that we approached our NASCAR game with Activision on the console. And so the level of assists that you've got in there are pretty comprehensive for this sort of game. You know, you can have all the assists on, which give you assisted braking, kind of a traction control, that sort of thing going around the corners, a full racing line. Or you can turn them all off. You can put it in the fully manual, turn all the assists off, and what that gives you is a totally different experience for the more experienced drivers. And the other thing that we wanted to make sure was that, you know, every car in the game feels differently, that they all have their own unique style, they handle in a different way to each other, as you'd expect to. You know, we didn't want it to be an arcade racer. We wanted it to be an authentic racer that, you know, if you're a new driver and you try to drive a Bugatti Veyron, ultimately that car is going to try and kill you. That's what it's built for. You know, you shouldn't be able to handle that as an entirely new driver. And we wanted to get that same feeling in Auto Club Revolution, that you had to work your way up to handling those cars with all the assists off, rather than just being able to kind of step into it straight away and be able to handle it and win races in it. There is a kind of progression that you have to work up to that level of car in the game, as you would have to in real life.
That was Dan Robinson of Utechnics talking about Auto Club Revolution, which is free to play, so you may want to go check it out. Worst case scenario, you haven't spent any money and you delete something from your computer. That's it. But I'll leave the choice up to you. For now, that's it for this week. I should mention, though, quickly before we go, a quick programming note. From now on, Got Game will be airing at 8 o'clock Sunday mornings. That's 8 o'clock on Sunday mornings from now on, at least until further notice. And by further notice, I mean at least for the foreseeable future, months and months and months ahead. I also want to mention that next week, you should definitely tune in. It's our 5-year anniversary, and we are going to celebrate it in a big way. So tune in for that show. But this week's show is done. So for Christine Chubb and Tim Ashdown, who sat in for Moment Crushy, Tim Ashdown, by the way, is from CNG Magazine. You can find his work at cgmagazine.ca. But for Tim and Christine, I'm Brian Calhoun. This has been Got Game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.